Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
On DAB+, online, via the TalkSport app, and on your smart speaker.
The Women's Football Show.
With Leanne Sanderson.
Absolutely first class.
On TalkSport 2.
Hello, this is TalkSport's Women's Football Show podcast. Every week, I'll be bringing you all the exclusive content and the best of our show. Don't forget you can listen back to the full Women's Football Show via the TalkSport app. This week, we're on Monday at 5pm. So swipe for TalkSport 2, find Monday, you can listen full there. Remember, we'll be bringing you live commentary from England's Euro qualifier against Sweden this Friday on TalkSport 2 from 7:30pm. Make sure you're tuned in for that one. This week on our show, I was joined by former Arsenal teammate Gillian Flatty, and we talked all about her life after football.
I'm good, thank you, Lee. How are you?
I'm doing well, mate. You know what, right? I always say this. I always love to get people on a show that I'm friends with and that I've got a good relationship with. And we bumped into each other recently at Stamford Bridge. And what I love about you and I is when we see each other, that's why I wanted to get on my show. Honesty, lovely conversations. Sometimes our conversations may be too much for people to handle. So it's good that it's you and I. But how are you doing? And obviously, I know your dad very well that passed away, unfortunately. And I know you struggled with that. So how are you feeling and how are you doing in retirement life?
Yeah, I mean, it's going well. I mean, I think obviously in December, we come up to dad's 1 year. So I think it's January, February, and probably in March, I was gone for a little bit of a tough time, to be honest with you. But yeah, I mean, I'm loving being retired. I'm working in a primary school 3 days a week, going back to what I already knew before turning pro. And then, yeah, doing a bit of obviously the commentary work as well. So I'm still getting my football fixed, but I'm also getting a bit of a normal life as well. So yeah, I'm lucky.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I get asked this question all the time. Do I miss playing? And I'm just like, absolutely not. But what I will say is that when I'm in America, because I'm over here working at the moment, I do see the pitch and I'm a little bit like, oh, like when I'm in England and it's freezing cold here, I'm like, nah. Yeah. When I'm here, I'm thinking I get nostalgic. You know, is there ever a moment where you think, you know, because you retired pretty early, right? You were quite young.
Yeah, I was only, what, 30, 31 when I retired. I think if dad hadn't passed away, then I wouldn't have been retiring as early as I did. But there are times when I'm commentating on a game, I'm thinking, oh, why is she doing this? Why is she doing that? Like, I feel like I'll just get the kit back on and play. But yeah, then I obviously get the other side of it, where if I want to take a weekend off and do stuff with family, I could take a weekend off, which, you know, my mum always says to me, go into coaching, go into that. And I'm like, no, I don't want to, mum, because it's just, I like my balance that I've got at the moment and I don't want that to change.
Yeah, do you think there's this pressure when you retire? Because obviously you're still doing your punditry work and you're brilliant. And I love your honesty because we kind of cut from the same cloth. But do you think there's this pressure when people retire to kind of go into commentary or coaching and kind of stay within the game? And then when people kind of disappear, people are like, what happened to them? Why did they not stay in the game? But they just might not want to.
Yeah, I even say it now about former players. I'm like, where's this player gone? Like, she's just gone A1 or something. Like, no one knows where she is. And yeah, no, I completely agree. I think for me, when I retired, obviously, I didn't want to, I could have realistically took 6 months off really when I finished. But I always see it as, one, I need to work. I need to be busy. I'm that sort of person. And two, I didn't want to give, I wanted to get 6 months on someone else who potentially was going to retire, because we know what it's like in this industry. So I just wanted to get straight into it. And obviously with the punditry and commentary, you're going in basically at ground level again. You've got to learn everything that you didn't know before. So yeah, I've just been trying to be like a sponge really and just soak up as much information and learn as much about this business as well. So it's good. I'm enjoying it.
Lovely. So I think as well, I want to talk about your successful career. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think, you know, minimal England caps, 9, right? And I always felt like you should have had way more. You know, would you say that was a fair assessment? And do you look back on anything now in your career and you think, you know, what? Why do you think you didn't get as many caps? As I don't think I'm the only one that would feel that way. You know, because we played together, I played against you a number of times, and you know, you've had an amazing career, successful. You don't spend, you know, 7-8 years at Arsenal in these top teams, captaining these teams, if you're not good enough. But I always felt like you never really got the opportunity you deserved. Did you feel that way?
Yeah, and in all honesty, Lee, I think when I made my debut against China, and I think I might have been what, I think about 26, 27 then, I never thought in my life I'd get an England senior cap. So for me, playing in that game, I was like, I don't care if I never play for England again because I've got something that I never thought I'd ever have. And yeah,
hold on. I want to stop you there, Jill, for a second, because you were 26, 27 when you got your first cap, right? And I know you're coming from a humble place where you're like, you know, I never imagined I'd play for England, but that's still pretty late. And you were always knocking on the door. How old were you in your quadruple team? Like 16?
Like 15.
Exactly. You know, and it's taken 11 years for that situation to happen. So I love how humble you are, but I still think it came too late.
I represented England obviously at all the younger age groups and played as well. Like I got so many caps for the youth teams, but yeah, I don't know whether it potentially be my face didn't fit in the senior team or certain managers just weren't really keen on me. But I've always been a player where I'm like, as long as I'm doing the business for my club, that's all that mattered to me. And if I got England, I got England. If I didn't, I didn't. So for me, yeah, to have 9 caps when I thought I never would have won, yeah, I was happy with that.
And obviously, looking back on your career, 7 years at Arsenal, 4 at Chelsea, 4 at West Ham, ending your career at Liverpool, you know, what do you think gets the best out of Gilly, you know, management-wise? Because we talk a lot on this show about coaches and communication and how some of this is not open and honest and they feed you lip service and all those types of things. But what are the best managers you played under and why?
Do you know, all I've ever wanted from a manager is honesty. Honesty and to feel valued at a club. And I feel like every time I've left the club, it's because that value's gone. And that's what, and I'm so much like that, Lee, where I'm like, I will give everything. And if I feel a manager values me and wants me and loves me, I'll go to war for you. Do you know what I mean? And I just feel like every club that I've been at, it got to the point where, oh, it's just Gilly. You know, Gilly's not going to go nowhere. Gilly's going to stay. And that's why I moved on. But for me, yeah, one of the best managers I've ever played under for that is Matt Bid. You know, he knows when to put an arm around you. He knows, especially towards me, he can go, listen, that's not good enough. I need more from you. But he just got the best out of me. And that's why I say it's fitting, really, that I ended my career playing again for him. Because in all honesty, I wouldn't have wanted to retire underneath anyone else.
Yeah, and obviously a lot of managers do see your value. And I agree with you about Beardy. I mean, I love that about him. He's open and honest. And that's all you ask for. You've been a captain of teams. So obviously, there's a lot of managers that do value you. Do you like that responsibility? And how much does that change you on the field of play when you're captain compared to when you're not?
I love being captain. I've had a bit of an experience with the captaincy in regards to, like, obviously Chelsea, I was vice captain, and obviously Arsenal, I was vice captain at points. And I always felt like I was good enough to be vice, but never to be the captain. And then it was only when really going to West Ham where Beardy said, listen, I want you to make you my captain. It was the first time really that I felt like someone's fully trusted me with this role. And whether I had the armband or not, I was no different. I was still loud on the pitch. I still organised and communicate. But it was, as a captain, and in all honesty, a captain you don't realise until you go to a team like West Ham, who we had a lot of adversity. You know, we was fighting relegation. That's when really I learned how to be a captain. You know, difficult conversations with the team, difficult conversations with the media. There was trouble going on and off the pitch, which I had to basically handle. And I did bring a lot home. Like, I was like stressed out as anything put home. But yeah, I learned so much from just being given that the opportunity to have that role.
And obviously the women's game now, you know, you and I are both still in it. And I feel really blessed to be working within the game, you know, and doing the men's game as well. What's your assessment of the WSL and the championship? Because I think, you know, I often give a lot of credit to our former club, Arsenal. Because obviously they're flying in with regards to attendances and setting out stadiums. But sometimes I think it's not a true reflection of how the league is. So when you look at the other attendances for Manchester United around Lee Valley and at Man City, I still think there's a lot of work to be done. What would you say your assessment is, you know, of the women's game right now?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with that. And I think it's great that you have the top three, in all fairness, selling out their stadiums and attracting consistent fans. But it needs to be replicated the whole way down. For me, I think the league needs to be expanded. I think more clubs need to come into it. I feel like we've had 12 clubs for as long as it's existed. Do you know what I mean? And now I think it's the time. I don't think in the Championship it should just be one team up, and I don't believe it should be one team down either, because there's a lot of teams and clubs who have been got away with relegation when really, in regards to not just on the pitch, off the pitch, the things that they've got away with and the standards that they're at the club, they've been fortunate. There's always been really one bad team really in the league, and it saved them. Do you know what I mean? So that's one thing I think that definitely needs to improve, and hopefully it will grow. Obviously, especially with the new owners coming in too. But yeah, I think it's just replicating, not just having it the top two or three doing it, but the whole league doing it.
The Conti Cup final took place in front of a record crowd at Molineux this weekend, as Chelsea and Arsenal went head to head for the first trophy of the season. Gilly and I look back on the match and how it sounded on TalkSport.
And the 13th Women's League Cup final is off and underway. Only as far as James on the edge of the box, though. She took it in a stride brilliantly. Shoots right-footed and it's beaten away by the goalkeeper, Zinsberger. Header away by woman Moy for Arsenal. Only as far as Ramirez. Edge of the D-low shot. It's in! Ramirez for Chelsea!
We're looking now at the replays that we've got here in the press box, and I think there's a handball leading up to it.
And VAR is checking it, and indeed the referee, Cheryl Foster, has been sent straight away to the pitch side monitor and decides to rule the goal out.
Credit where credit's due, VAR, they dealt with it quickly.
It's come out to McCabe, 30 yards out, rising drive, tipped over the top by Hampton. Record crowd for a League Cup final. 21,462 at Molineux. It's dinked over the top by Wrighton. Lauren James, great first touch. James is clear, in on goal, saved by Zinsberger. And that is the end of normal time, plus added time, so extra time to come. Ford lays it square. Blackstenius, can she put it in? She has! Arsenal may have won it.
Well, they've puffed Arsenal, and they've finally got past Hannah Hampton.
The final whistle blows. It's League Cup victory for Arsenal again. The first silverware of the campaign is going back to North London as the League Cup is hoisted high into the air. No quadruple for Chelsea. Arsenal are the League Cup winners for 2024.
Firstly, at TalkSport, we want to send our best wishes to Frieda Mornum, who went down off an off the ball incident at the end of normal time. Wishing her a very speedy recovery, and we're glad to hear she's in a stable condition. So, Jill, obviously, you and I saw the game yesterday, and, you know, it's not something you want to see within any game, but when Frieda Mornum went down, you know, when that happens, has it ever happened to you when you've been a teammate, and what's the reaction, do you think, from the players? Because I think Arsenal is probably in Chelsea's head as well as the game continued to go on.
Yeah, I think, listen, in this day and age, obviously, we don't see this really in the women's game. We see it. It's been more frequent in the men's game. So obviously, yeah, I think obviously watching it at home, it was just, it's awful because you don't know what's going on. You could tell, I think as well, how quiet it was in the stadium. And I think even players having to witness that, you know, and then obviously try and go on as well, not just necessarily Arsenal, but Chelsea players having to see it too. But I think it was a great response from both medical teams to jump straight in and help her. And she travelled back as well, I think, with the team. She didn't have to go to hospital, which is positive news too. But yes, unfortunate enough, I've never really had to witness even a player getting knocked out, really. I think I've only ever seen Katie Chapman once in training pass out after she'd headbutted someone, but that was it. So yeah, I'm quite fortunate in that sense.
Yeah, and obviously, did you think Arsenal were worthy winners in the, I mean, it went down to the wire. It was certainly getting spicy down on that sideline with Emma Hayes and Jonas Eidefeld. You know, do you think Arsenal were the worthy winners in the end? I was surprised it actually went into extra time.
Yeah, do you know what I said, Lee, as well? Yesterday, I said that all the games they've played each other this year have all been so different. Like, these all came, obviously, the one at the Emirates when Chelsea got battered, the one at Stamford Bridge where Arsenal got battered. And I just felt this was probably one of the most boring ones out of all the times they've played against each other. But I think there's a lot of pressure on both of them wanting to take the trophy. You know, Arsenal know that that's the only thing that they could win this year. Chelsea are obviously fighting for the quadruple. So there's a lot of that. And it seemed like both teams were just trying to be a little bit more cautious with it. But I'd say overall, yeah, I think Arsenal were the deserved winners. And yeah, it's spicy and that's what we want.
Yeah, it is, definitely. I love to see that type of stuff. What do you think this means for Jonas Eidefeld? Because obviously, I think, obviously, he signed a new contract last year. I feel like when people are starting to question if he's the right guy for the club, he then seems to deliver. He did it last year in the Conti Cup. But what do you make of, you know, his position right now? And surely that must help, you know, his case to kind of stay on as manager, winning the Conti Cup a little bit.
Yeah, I think, listen, we both know what it's like to be at Arsenal. We both know the expectations from fans and the club is that you have to win, you know. And I think Arsenal have got away for too many years not winning, you know, not bringing home silverware. And I think for me, though, with Arsenal, they don't necessarily want to be just seen as cup specialists. Obviously, FA Cup, Conti Cup. For them, they want to get the WSL. They want to bring that home because, in my eyes, that shows the most consistent team throughout the whole year. But yeah, I think it's saved his bacon a little bit, bringing that home. And then hopefully, but I think feel like with Arsenal fans, though, they obviously get frustrated because for the last couple of years, they've always been in it with a title. And then they just sort of get to a point where they just completely drop off. So I think the pressure will be on him next year to deliver the WSL.
Yeah, and TalkSport's very own Abigail Davis spoke to Arsenal manager after the game, Jonas Eidevall, and striker Alessia Russo to get their reaction and thoughts on that final.
Very proud of the team and the staff group. I think it's an excellent performance from us. It's obviously a very, very hard-fought game with small details in the end, but we do everything we can to be on the right side of those margins, and we get the reward.
And important to discuss Frida Marnham. How is she? What's the update on her?
That is very important. Of course, you get afraid when you see pictures like that. Immediately after I asked about it, she should be fine. There should not be anything wrong. But I haven't seen her yet.
And it shows great mental strength from the players that were out on the pitch to carry on and make sure they got the job done, especially having just been through those difficult circumstances.
Yeah, I think something we learned from the last time we played Chelsea here in the league was to say, like, how do we go as a team under stressed situations and still being able to be high performing and connecting and communicating? And we were not happy with the way we conducted ourselves there. Now you could obviously see the contrast picture of that. We're a really high performing team. We have a high performing environment. So we can handle a lot of external situations, and that's very, very nice to see.
And quite fit in, given the season that she's had, that Stina got the winner there for you.
It was, I think it's, I'm so happy for her, so happy for the team. They fight so hard, and sometimes you think when you do all those things so well, can you also get a reward for it? And we did today, and should be happy for that.
And just finally, I have to ask about that altercation with Emma at the end. What was that about? What brought that on? And how surprised were you by it?
I don't think that was a big thing. I just think it was an argument in the heat of it. If we were playing with one or multi balls in the competition, it's nothing I think about for it like that. It's just heat of the moment.
There's nothing better than winning a trophy as a team and celebrating with the fans. So, it was a tough game today, but really pleased.
So much talk in the build-up to this game about how this could help to salvage something this season for Arsenal. Was that in the back of your mind at all coming into this one?
Yeah, I think we know we've had some highs and lows this season. We're very aware of that. But we had a chance to win a trophy and we've done that today, which is really important to our season. And then we'll keep kicking in the league and keep pushing that right until the end. So, yeah, I think it's important that when you come into a final, you're ready to compete and you want to, yeah, you only want to win. That's all we want to do here at this club.
And for you personally, you entered the pitch in really difficult circumstances. How did you, as a group, get over what you'd just seen happen to Frida?
Yeah, it's tough. Frida's a great player, a great person, love having her around. And yeah, these things happen in football and it's really sad, but she's got the best people looking after her. And yeah, I'm not actually seen her yet, but here she's doing okay, so that's good. Yeah, it's not nice, but she's in the best hands and we'll look after her.
Absolutely, and for Stina to get the winner as well, given the season that she's had, that was a really big moment as well, especially given how many chances there had been and the clinical edge that was lacking in the match.
Yeah, for sure. I think it was nice as well. Stina's Frida's best mate as well, so that was nice too. But yeah, she's had an incredible tournament this run. And yeah, it was almost written in the stars for her. So it was great. And maybe we should have taken them earlier, but it doesn't matter. We've won the trophy now, and that's all that matters.
Now, Jill, a player that I like as a person and I like as a player, Alessia Russo. Talk to me about your thoughts on this. I know Blackstinius got the goal, obviously, but I just can't get my head around the fact that why Alessia is not getting the rub of the green at Arsenal. Like, why would you bring a player in for that much money, you know, from Manchester United and not really give her the game time? You know what I mean? I'm not saying it gives you a divine right to play. We've been on teams where players are coming for a lot of money and they end up playing and they might not be performing. But with Alessia, I just see a player that just needs to play. She's not playing badly.
I agree with you. And I think as well, it's about working hard to get the best out of Alessia. You know, I think for me, I'm not too keen on the Freedom Ornament and Alessia combination. I don't really think that works. I think it might be better if you potentially push Kim Little higher up to link with her. Because I think you're looking at Alessia with Ella Toon at Man United. It was all them slip balls through the defence that Alessia feeds off of. And I think sometimes when she comes so deep for the ball, you know, like holding the ball up, you don't have them third player runs to go past her. So I think it's just about trying to work out how the best fit. And I feel like with Blackstinius, she does something completely different. She'll stretch the back line. And I'd be interested to see them both playing together. I think Alessia playing off of Blackstinius, they both do opposite movements. Obviously, you know better than most in regards to being a striker. So it'd be interesting to see if you can sort of potentially get them to work together and have both in there.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think we don't see many coaches playing that kind of old school 4-4-2, you know, tall striker, little striker. Do you know what I mean? We don't see that very often. Now, another one of your former sides, Chelsea, quadruple hopes are over, but there's still a lot to play for. It's hard to imagine, you know, Emma Hayes could end her tenure at Chelsea without a trophy, isn't it? Isn't that incomprehensible to think about? Because it's a possibility.
Yeah, it is. And that's what I think sometimes. Obviously, when Emma announced leaving, you know, there was all this, right, quadruple. That's a lot of pressure to put on a manager, on a set of players. And then also there's the whole talk of Champions League. She wants to win it. She goes to the US. She's going from club to international. So there's all of this fixated on doing that and bringing that home. And it's not going to be an easy feat. You're going to have to go and play Barcelona. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's going to be tough. And I think they look tired yesterday. I think they've had a tough couple of weeks. Obviously, Ajax game wasn't just a simple, easy game as well. They made rotations for it. But yeah, I think there is a lot of pressure. And I think a lot of the outside talk probably doesn't help that either.
Yeah, let's hear from Emma Hayes now. She spoke in a post-match press conference about the interaction between herself and Arsenal manager Jonas Seidel after the game.
Listen, I think there's a way to conduct yourself on the touchline. I really do. And I think that it's absolutely essential we role model in the right way. But I'm not down for male aggression on the touchline. I'm not. And fronting up with players, for me, that's unacceptable. And yeah, I was disappointed. And I told Jonas that. I don't think it's okay to behave like that. He got a yellow card, and in fact, he probably should have been sent off. I'm all for competing to win. I've never been booked in 12 years, you know, my time here. I totally accept he's a winner and he wants to win, but his behaviour on the touchline wasn't acceptable.
Now, Jill, we touched upon it earlier on in the show. You know, it's not something you usually see within the women's game. So everyone goes crazy when there's pretty normal things happening in the men's game on the sideline. I know Emma wasn't happy with the way Jonas Seidel, you know, was acting on the sideline. There was a little altercation with him and Aaron Cuthbert. What did you make of it all?
Well, when he obviously explained afterwards, he said the reason was because Arsenal wanted multi-ball, Chelsea wanted one ball. Then obviously Chelsea, then they're in a situation where they want to speed the game up and want to go for multi-ball. So I can understand him doing it because I'd be a bit like, hold on a minute, you asked for that. So it's just obviously it's going to be heated on the sideline. And I've always been a player, Lee, where something happens on the pitch, it's done and dusted. I don't take that off. Like, I've had full-blown rads on the pitch. But when you come on pitch, you're giving each other a hug. Like, it's football. Emotions are high. And, yeah, I do think when anything happens in a women's game, it's like, everyone needs to talk about it and escalate it further. And probably the best time not to talk about it is after the game when your emotions are running high.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, yeah, you're right. Exactly spot on, Jill. And obviously the use of VAR within the game as well is not something we have in the women's game. We have it over here in the NWSL in America. What did you make of the use of it? And obviously, Erin Cuthbert, Emma Hayes has been a real big advocate of VAR. And I completely understand why. But she probably would have wished that yesterday it wasn't in play, right? It was a correct decision. Maya Ramirez ended up scoring in the air. But what did you make of how it was used within the game yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was important that it was used because if that if that's not used and the referee doesn't see it, Chelsea are 1-0 up. And I think even watch it back in slow-mo, Erin knows exactly what she's doing. Like, is she? And in all fairness, it probably should be a booking because it's a deliberate handball. She knows what she's doing. But yeah, I think it's VAR is the first thing to get slaughtered when it gets it wrong or it takes too long or, you know. But I think especially in a cup final when there are trophies to be won, you know, I think it was the right decision and it was great. It was being used.
Why do you think Arsenal seemed to have Chelsea's number within this tournament? We saw last year, I did the commentary on that game at Selhurst Park. Mentioned it earlier, Jill, about the fact that the game is every single time they play each other is completely different. But do you think there's an element of complacency within this type of trophy with Chelsea? Because obviously we know we played in the Conti Cup. A trophy is a trophy to me, and as it is to you, and I think it is to the players. But do you think there's an element of if it was the FA Cup, there'd be a different approach, or what do you put this down to?
Yeah, no, I think the Continental Cup doesn't probably get as much not respect, but as much want as the FA Cup. Like, I think yesterday was the biggest attendance that the Continental Cup's ever had. Like, when we were playing the Continental Cup, you'd be lucky to get about 3,000 there. Do you know what I mean? So I think even that, whereas you knew FA Cup every year, when we was playing FA Cup, you'd be banked to have 25, 26,000 minimum. And obviously, look at the numbers you get now. So, yeah, I feel from a FA's point of view or a Continental point of view that there needs to be a bigger push. But also for a player's point of view, it doesn't matter. It's not downgraded. I know I see fans online yesterday saying, Arsenal fans buzzing because they've won the smallest cup. Like, no, do you know what I mean? A cup's a cup, a trophy's a trophy. And whether it's FA Cup, League or Continental Cup, I'd be buzzing to have silverware around my neck.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. A trophy's a trophy. We won the quadruple, Jill, and there's a reason why we're the only team in England to ever do it.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
We were spoiled for choice this weekend, and there were four other WSL matches taking place. TalkSport's Uma Gura brought us all the results from those.
While the Conti Cup may have stolen the spotlight this weekend, there is still a WSL title race to be decided. Just four games this weekend due to Chelsea and Arsenal's absences, but they were big fixtures nonetheless. Man City put 3 points between themselves and Chelsea at the top of the table thanks to a dominant 4-1 victory over Liverpool. Two more goals for Bunny Shaw. Could she be heading for a surefire golden boot? And more importantly, with such an important advantage heading into the international break, could Man City be storming toward the title? A good weekend for both Manchester teams as United came from behind to defeat Everton 4-1. Still a huge uphill battle for the Red Devils if they want to chase a Champions League place. But two goals from Ella Toon means she becomes the first ever Man United women's player to score 50 goals for the club. It's a sign of more great things to come from the Lioness. Meanwhile, nothing could separate Aston Villa and Leicester City after Rachel Daly volleyed home a late equaliser to leave the score at 2-2. Leicester were playing for the first time following the sacking of their manager Willie Kirk, but they could not hold on to their lead. The result means the Foxes sit in ninth place in the table, a poor reward after what looked early on as though it could be a fantastic season. And there was nothing to separate West Ham and Brighton, who ended an uneventful fixture in a goalless draw. European qualifiers and the FA Cup mean it'll be a few weeks before the WSL gets back underway. But when it does, it is possible that defending champions Chelsea, who had such high hopes of a quadruple, could be left with just the WSL within their reach.
Okay, Jill, so Manchester United 4, Everton 1. You know, Manchester United have had great moments this season, haven't they? And some really low moments. But Everton, you know, it sounds crazy now because they lost the game 4-1, but they showed, you know, they were up at half-time 1-0, and then just, you know, Manchester United just seemed to take it to another level, didn't they?
Yeah, and also, when you watch back the goals, like, Everton should feel frustrated, really, with two or Ella Toon's ones, because it's come from their own turnover. You know, even like you're looking at Man United's goal that they conceded, it's come from defenders trying to play out and trying to do too much. And it's just, and that's what I think, the game has changed so much. But we've lost the recognition or the art of, listen, put your foot through it. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing wrong with doing that. And I think, yeah, Everton can feel a bit gutted, really, with the result.
As we heard earlier, Ella Toon became the first Manchester United women's player to score 50 goals for the club. TalkSport's Jeff Peters caught up with the woman of the hour to find out exactly what that achievement meant to her after the game.
Yeah, really special. I actually forgot that if I'd scored another goal, it was my 50th, because I've been on 49 for that long. Someone reminded me after the game. So, yeah, very special day for me. So nice to score for your club, but to score 50 times is, yeah, dream come true.
How important is that, the half century, first United woman to do that?
Yeah, it's really important. It's nice to be the first Man United women's player to reach 50 goals for the club, but for me it's not about that, it's about winning games week in, week out, and today was tough, but we made sure that we shown character coming out in the second half and, yeah, put four goals away in 45 minutes, so yeah, we're happy with that.
Everton, meanwhile, Jill, you know, they put up a really good fight, you mentioned it before, after going ahead, but, you know, it just isn't enough. Talk to me about a team like Everton. I've said it before, they're kind of that team that's never going to get relegated, but, you know, what is the kind of hopes for the club? Because you can see now it's almost like, where is their style of play? You don't know what any given day what Everton team are going to turn up. But I don't think they're ever in doubt. They're always going to be within the league.
Yeah, like they're strong enough not to go down. But I just feel like they don't have no DNA. And I said this yesterday, that when I was at Arsenal, Everton was pushing us all the way. You know, we nearly lost the league at one point to Everton, and we only won it on goal difference, and even in cups and that. But I feel like what killed them really was, I think, when the new manager, the ex-Lyon manager, come in and they had this big investment, and what they did is they just chucked 100 grand at Bennison, and rather than actually using that money to get a really good squad, and there's no reason why Everton can't be doing what Liverpool are doing this year, you know, and I just think it's about getting the right people and realising the history of the club and how Everton have been in our league. So, yeah, I think there's no much DNA there either, which doesn't help, obviously, them going forward.
Yeah, and obviously your former side, Liverpool, came up against, you know, the team is absolutely flying right now. Manchester City 4, Liverpool 1. You know, how much do you think psychologically that will give them the edge over Chelsea? I know obviously Chelsea have still got that game in hand. And what do you think is the biggest difference between last season and Gareth Taylor since he's been in the job? You know, I've said it many times, I think they've underachieved at Man City. The amount of money, the investment. What do you think's changed this year within this squad?
I think it's helped that there's a lot more people chipping in with the goals, rather than just relying on one player. I think Khadija Shaw, she's become even more clinical this year. And I think mixing up her goals as well, not just tap-ins, not just headers, but the goals she scored on the weekend, an absolute rocket. You know, and I think just mixing that up, they've obviously been fortunate, like they lost Jill Roar, but Jess Park's come in and literally took that role as her own. But the only thing with me that not worries with City, but obviously we're talking about goals conceded and that, is they're giving away some sloppy, stupid goals that just shouldn't happen. And you're thinking, if you are going to end up pushing Chelsea to the wire, that goal difference is going to be so huge. So I think they need to just tighten up that a little bit. But yeah, I think with City, it's just been more complete. And also, it probably helps them now. They only have one focus, which is the WSL. You know, they're not in no other cups. And there is that sort of pressure on him as well to deliver, because they can't have the season that they've had and then imagine coming home with no trophy at all.
Yeah, talking of rockets, I mean, in that exact same goal yesterday, Liverpool, Taylor Hines got that rocket. And then Bunny Shaw, I mean, what a player she is, Jill. You know, you spoke about her there, you touched upon her. I mean, you know, she's 6 goals ahead now in the Golden Boot, you know. And I just think she doesn't really get the credit she deserves.
And also, she does it consistently, Lee. Like, obviously, the year before, obviously, her and Rachel Daly was going for it. But then you're looking at this year, Rachel Daly hasn't got the goals nowhere near what she's done. And that's what I think it is. It's one of those ones where everyone talks about probably other players who maybe have a bigger social media presence or bigger name off the pitch, whereas her, Bunny Shaw, is very much do about her business. I'd rather have a player on my team that does the business week in, week out and doesn't have all that other distraction and does what she's meant to do, and that's put the ball into the back of the net.
Yeah, I think she's brilliant, honestly. I think Ellen White obviously retiring, then Bunny Shaw finally got her opportunity. She's not really looked back since. And I just think I'm not quite sure why people are reluctant to kind of give her the credit. Not us, but I'm saying in general. Now, Aston Villa 2, Leicester City 2. Leicester playing for the first time without Willie Kirk since he got sacked. We obviously know he was suspended for a couple of games and had the interim managers in there. You know, what have you made of this Leicester City team this year?
Oh, look, I think obviously before... before obviously when he got sacked, I think for them last year when he came in, he shored them up defensively and kept them in the league. And it was always, they can do well defensively, but they couldn't score goals. And then this year they've added that to it, you know. And I think, listen, obviously whatever's happened, happened with him and he has to go. But it'd be interesting now to see what they do. Do they keep the interim managers in? Do they give them a chance? Or do they just see it through to the end of the season and then go and get someone? Because they've got the financial backing there to be able to do it. And they've got a good squad, so it's now it's about just improving on it and pushing up.
And obviously Aston Villa and Carla Ward last year finishing fifth, you know, last year, do you think they overexceeded? Because I think this season, I'm not quite sure what's going on at Aston Villa, because obviously Rachel Daly isn't scoring anywhere near as much as she did. Darley, Jordan Nobbs, Lucy Stanforth, there's been a lot of, like, you know, players not playing. So what do you put this all down to? Because I think they were a team that looked like they could kind of, at some point soon last season, break into that top four on a minimal budget, really.
Yeah, and I do think they overachieved. And I think sometimes when you do that as a team, the next year, people are going to expect you to be up there in fifth again. People are going to expect you to be pushed into the top four. And I don't think they realise and understand the difference in budgets and the different, even in recruitment, Lee. Like, yeah, they've signed players, but those players that they've signed are really players who can't necessarily get into the top three or top four. They're sitting on the benches, and it's about that being the difference, you know. I think whereas you're looking at then those top three and top four, they go and get players that are starting in the other countries in their top team. So it's just about understanding that. But I think for Aston Villa, if they can compete every year fifth, sixth, and being in around that for their budget, I think that's good for a club like that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think our only 0-0 draw of the weekend, your former side again, West Ham 0 Brighton nil. At this point in the season, Jill, you know, with these two teams, they're comfortable based upon the fact that Bristol City, you know, have just not been able to get the results this season. But how difficult is it to motivate yourself kind of to continue within the season when there's not really much to play for?
I said this when I was talking to someone at their Champions League game. It's very, very difficult at this part of the season when you don't really have anything to play for. In all honesty, you're thinking, how many games have we got left? I used to even go, how many training sessions have I got left? Let me see, how many weeks have I got left in football? Where am I going on holiday? Things like that. You do naturally think that, because we've both played for teams where we're consistently winning. So when you don't have that to aim for, all you can really do is be a party spoiler and try and muck up as many other teams' chances or challenges as the season goes on. So, yeah, I think it is difficult. But I think with West Ham, especially, they need to rack up as many points as they can on the ball to give them a good stead going into next season.
Yeah, I want to get your thoughts on your former side, because at one point, you know, it looked like they were kind of progressing, and obviously you spent some time there as well. What do you think, you know, why do you think they've underachieved? They've made some good signings this year, Katrina Gorey and Shalina Zdolski as well. So I like the fact that in that window, they did what they could to bring players in order to stay up. But ultimately, if Bristol City weren't in the league, West Ham would be, you know, right there along with Brighton. What do you put it down to?
And I think that's the same as last year, Lee. I think they got all their points from September to December. They didn't. I don't even think they picked up one or two points after that. Like, and it was only because there's another club. There's only a reason, because there was another club that was worse off than them that they didn't get relegated last year. I just think for me with West Ham, I think there's too many changes in regards to managers and coaches, and they have too many players coming in and going out every single year. At the end of every season, there's 7-8 players that go and there's 7-8 players that come in. The best teams are the ones who can hold their best players and build a team and add maybe one or two, you know, coming in. But when you're constantly changing, it's hard to build those relationships.
Finally, I caught up with former Arsenal, Fulham and England striker Marianne Spacey, who is currently the head coach at Southampton Women. Marianne and I reflected on her amazing career, and I also asked her how life was going at Southampton.
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm in America right now, but obviously we bumped into each other recently at Wembley when we received our legacy caps.
Yeah, that's right. It was a great night. Like, obviously legacy caps as well, but just catching up with old friends, old colleagues, and seeing how everyone's just looks exactly the same and has got the same personalities as they always had.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, before we get into your current managerial role at Southampton, for those of my listeners that don't know, I will hype you up and big you up because you were like the original footballer that we all looked up to. Ian Wright speaks about all the time as being the original. It was you first, then it was almost Rachel Yankee that became those, you know, household names. Were you aware of kind of the impact you were having when you were playing?
I guess sometimes, you know, it was bizarre when sometimes when we'd been on the telly or whatever for games, even back then, and people would go, oh, I saw you score this goal. And it was just like, I always get really embarrassed and humbled by it, but also flattered. But you know that there's an impact, and however small, if it made the, you know, two or three girls go, I want to play football, then, you know, it's always a positive impact. So, you know, and like you said, there's a generation of players that have done amazing things that have helped the game to grow where it is today.
And there was moments where you probably don't remember, but I was little. I think Sophie, your little girl, not so little girl anymore, we was at this place and we were doing like this thing for Coca-Cola. I remember watching you strike the ball, and I remember thinking, like, growing up, you know, I looked up to people like, you know, David Beckham and Eric Cantona and those types of people. But it was like the first time I'd probably seen, you know, a female player that I actually wanted to be like, and that was you. And it's true. I know you're very humble in saying it, but what were your career highlights when you look back on your career as a player? Because obviously you spent some amazing, you know, times at Arsenal, but what was your highlight of your career?
Oh, it's really hard. When you get asked this, it's really hard to pick out any real one moment. Because I just enjoyed every moment of my career. Wins, losses you learn from, playing alongside and against some fantastic players. You always like, the first thing you think of is making your England debut, playing in a World Cup, playing in European Championships, playing in FA Cups, and all those kind of real moments that everybody kind of associates with playing at that level. But I always think about the people, you know, the people that I played with, the people I played against, and the friends that you make as well, because without everybody around you, you know, the team doesn't play. So some great on-pitch moments, but I think off-pitch is, like we said, meeting everyone at Wembley recently, you still have those same conversations. So I think people forget a little bit about, you know, what the off-pitch is like as well.
Yeah, I know. I saw the Arsenal girls at the, we got honoured on the pitch the other week, and it was like the laughs, like, Maz, it was just literally my stomach, my mouth. I haven't laughed like that in ages, and those are the memories you create. Now, you won the domestic treble at Fulham, right? And
at Arsenal.
But I want to talk about Fulham and when you guys went pro, because you went pro before everybody else did. Mohamed Al-Fayed backed the team and put a lot of money in that. Talk a little bit about that and why you kind of think it didn't continue on. Was it because other teams didn't get on board with what was going on and you guys just ran away with everything?
Yeah, so I actually joined Fulham in the last year that they were pro. So they'd been pro for 2 years. And when I was asked if I wanted to take a pro contract, I thought, you know what, I will, because although it was only for a year, I'd not had the opportunity before. It had been I was working and everything. And so I thought, let's do it. And I think what happened for those 3 years was amazing, because it started to kickstart something, but not quite really ignite it. And I think what happened was, because it was, like you said, other clubs were tempted but weren't brave enough maybe to make that jump. And the level of investment that was needed. So I think Fulham went, look, this isn't really happening around us. What we need to do now is just go back to, you know, semi-pro as it was afterwards. And then more teams became semi-pro from it. So rather than make the big jump from amateur to pro, it kick-started a semi-professional game where players could, you know, work less but train a little bit more. So the outcome was, you know, it was hard for the players at Fulham at the time to have that, you know, professionalism taken away. But for the game, it did kickstart the semi-professional movement.
And obviously now leads me on to manager of Southampton. I remember I spoke to you a couple of years ago. We just took on the role and you spoke to me about your goals and aspirations of what you were trying to do. I mean, you've done an amazing job, Marianne, you know, taking over in the Southern Prem. Now you're in the Championship, you know, fourth in the league. Talk to me about that journey. And obviously you were really one of the persons you said to me, we're going to be full time. And that was when you were in the league below the Championship. So talk a little bit about that journey and where you're at right now. And you must be delighted with where the team's at.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I came in here 2018, we had a 5-year plan to be in the Championship. And then, you know, that's come to fruition. But all the time in that 5 years, it was always every year was we want to be operating on the pitch and off the pitch a year ahead. So when we were in tier five, we were operating tier four, tier four, tier three, Championship. And I think what absolutely benefited us is the you know, people talk about investment, but investment isn't just financial, it's people and it's resources and, you know, having real advocates of the women's program within the club that go out and talk to other people about it. So, you know, we're really fortunate that the support we have around the club allows us to be on this, or not allows us, gives us the resource to continue on the journey. So, you know, where we are, it's hard to believe it's 5 years ago that we sort of started this, but I'm already thinking the next 5 years as well. So sometimes you have to just take a moment, reflect, breathe, you know, everyone that's been involved in this, you know, give a pat on the back to, and then start moving forwards again.
Yeah, a lot of people have said they actually prefer watching the Championship this year than the WSL because of how tight it is at the top. Now you've got yourselves, Sunderland, Palace, Birmingham, Cholton. I had Karen Hills on my show a couple of weeks ago, and like, you know, there's 4 points that's from first to fifth. You know, how amazing is it that it's so competitive?
It is, you know, for the neutral watching and coming in, like watching it from the outside, you go, it's so exciting. And it's really, it's what, you know, it's a challenging league. Anyone can beat anybody. The results, the one consistency has been the inconsistency of results all season. And no team has really dominated. But I think that just shows the growth of the game and the growth of the investment at that level and how, you know, clubs can see that getting into the WSL is so important to continue that growth, continue that investment. So Championship is, you know, it's a great league to play in. You're coaching with and playing against some really good players and some really good managers. So, you know, it's really exciting. It's really challenging, but it's a result of the growth of the game. And even tier three and tier four, more players are playing. So where more players are playing, there's more growth. Where there's more growth, there's more investment. And when there's more investment, it's exciting and really, really tight. And like I said, for the neutral, exciting to watch.
Yeah, and you played against Manchester United in the fifth round of the FA Cup. You know, you lost that game 3-1, but you competed. Like, how much were you up for that game and your players? And obviously, was that a true reflection of where you think your team is at? Because you were in the game up until the 75th minute, then Rachel Williams came on. You know, they had to make substitutions in order to kind of win the game. You must have not been delighted, you know, you lost the game in the end. But obviously, we've seen Bristol City come up in the WSL this season. They've only got 6 points on the board. But I thought you guys hung in there.
Yeah, and you know, before that we played Arsenal in the Connolly Cup and we had a fantastic crowd, over 13,000 at that game, and that was 2-1, you know, and we were, you know, it was a great game for the fans to watch and for the players to play in. And the beautiful thing about the squad, you know, when they were going out for the Man United game, they were like, come on, we've competed against Arsenal. If we can compete against them, you know, we got every chance in this game. And like you said, people, both Arsenal and Man United in those games made changes and brought players into the game, which we took as a real compliment. And, you know, we want to play football. We want to be a possession-based football. You know me as a player, it was all about having the ball and being able to, like, you know, beat players, being with the ball, without the ball, good movement. And I think that's what we really showcased in both those games, is what we're really capable of. What we've got to do now is consistently deliver those capabilities.
So, Gilly, we heard there from Marianne Spacey, Southampton doing really well in the Championship, currently in fourth, you know, promoted last year to the Championship. I like what Marianne's doing at that club. Is it a little bit too soon right now? It looks like the teams like Cholton, Sunderland and Crystal Palace. But what do you make of the job that Marianne Spacey's doing at Southampton?
Oh, really good. I think as well, someone like Marianne, who you know, has been around the game for so many years. I used to watch her playing when I was growing up. Like, she's able to install those standards into those clubs. And I also think as well, knowing what to expect and knowing, listen, there's a lot of clubs who get a lot of money or investment and they go, right, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. She's realistic with it, you know, and I think that's huge. And I wish them all the best. It'd be great to see them in the WSL one day.
That's all for today. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next Monday when we'll look back on the Lionesses' all-important first qualifier against Sweden.